You're listening to the Two Preachers Talking Podcast, a place where the love of God and moderate thinking come to life. And now, here are the two preachers, Marty and John.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Marty.
And I'm John.
And we are the Two Preachers Talking, come to you from the beautiful Shenandoah Valley in Virginia here on a nice, kind of a fall day. Nice fall day, isn't it, John?
Yeah, somebody posted on Facebook last night, said that the weather went from 95 to 55 like it saw a state trooper.
It's kind of like when it's out here by the school, you know, it goes from 35 to 25, and there's always a Harrisonburg City police officer there.
Yeah.
You can tell when they're there, but
I mean, I'm not saying I do that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's me.
But it's
a great day. It's a great day.
Well, you know, it is September. It's the end of September almost, and it is fall, so I guess the weather has to change a little bit.
It's football weather.
And this is a Friday when we're recording, so are you going to a high school game tonight or anything?
No, Broadway's on a bye week tonight, and I think we're just going to stay home. As funny as it is, you know, we think about fall as football, but the middle school team I'm helping to coach, we actually got our last two games next week.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be finished by the first week in October, but we'll still have JV and varsity games to go to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so how about you? You going to a JMU game this weekend? Are they away?
Yeah, so you got a JMU hat. No, JMU is playing Appalachian State this weekend, and they're playing in Boone, North Carolina.
Oh,
so I won't get to I'll probably try to watch it on TV if I can. But yeah, we should say, as we said, it was on Friday. This is Friday, but it's September 23rd.
Yeah.
I've always thought, John, we should give the data when we do these things sometimes. If you listen to a podcast, you know, other podcasts, you realize that they do that and share those things. So,
yeah.
You know, it's good to be back doing our podcast again. And I've been listening to some, you know, to kind of get myself geared up for ours. But so how are things going for you, John?
It's going good, man. Yeah. It's going good. Been a good week. Been rolling with it. Still, I guess next week will be my last week of leave before going back to church full time. I'm gearing up. Jessica will probably tell you I'm like a bull in the chute. You know, getting ready. I've already started to kind of ramp up some ideas and start getting some legwork done.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? How's your week been?
Oh, it's been good, and it's been kind of busy. I think as we're thinking about our topic for today, I had my last memorial service of some that I've been doing here for the past, month and a half, couple, two or three of there. So that's done, and it really went well. A good service for a good man, and just being glad that this is over for a little bit. Now, I guess as church, we can sort of, I guess as our churches, we're now headed into sort of that time where we really got to gear up a little bit because we've got Thanksgiving coming up. Yep. And, you know, with Thanksgiving, I don't guess we really deal with it in the same way we do with Christmas and Easter.
Yep.
They seem to be a little different, you know, a Thanksgiving or whatever. But still, I think we're dealing with that as we prepare for that. But, you know, Advent's coming right on up, John.
Advent's coming, brother. I was actually doing some, one of the things I'm doing gearing back up is looking at Advent and things like that for the life of the church. And, you know, fall typically starts to hit it, right? We're doing, I don't know about you guys, we're doing budgeting for the church. We're getting our stuff ready for next year. We always have a big trunk or treat at our congregation, so we're, you know, gearing up for that thing, and that's good, man.
Good. Well, I mean, we're still trying to process some of those things. We really have hit that place in our church where, you know, we're not a big church in the moment, you know, in that sense, but you know, it's in the season that we're in.
Yep.
I think post COVID, and then with our church being an older church, we've lost a few folks, and some folks that I think were there before didn't return, and it's just, you know, it's just that season of life that our churches are dealing with. The past two services, I had to gear in on that, the scripture from Ecclesiastes, that there's a season for everything.
Yep.
And, you know, how does the church build itself back up? And, you know, one of the things we wanted to talk about today was, you know, we deal a lot with grief, don't we, John?
We do. In different contexts.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, some people think grief only has to do with death, but, you know, especially in ministry, we find grief has to do with a lot of different things, grieving job loss and grieving, you know, when you even folks who buy new homes and just it comes in different forms and fashions.
Right.
But we are surrounded by grief a lot of times.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, we didn't want to just talk about death being a part of grief. But I think that in the life of our couple of churches and things we've experienced, I think we do want to touch a little bit on grief, but not just the grief that we deal with families, because when someone passes away, we spend some time with that family, don't we?
Yeah.
Trying to encourage them and comfort them and give them some peace in the midst of all that they're going through. I was going to say that, so we were meeting, I think last week, about the service that we did Wednesday evening. And one of the sons came to work with us at the funeral home, and they had put together a nice little schedule and those things. And it had been almost a month and a half since this gentleman had passed away. And so because of some things they had to, you know, postpone and put in, he was cremated. So we were able to do more of a memorial service in that way. But I remember him asking, he said, I don't know, or not asking, but saying, I don't know how y'all do this in 3 days.
Yeah.
Talking to the funeral director and me too. And
yep.
So, you know how that
yep.
is, John, it's a whirlwind of an experience, isn't it?
It is.
Once you get that call,
especially if it is a unexpected,
right.
You know, if you know that someone is, you know, maybe hospice has been called in or they've mm-hmm. been diagnosed with a terminal, you know, condition, those things at least give you a sense of, you know, this is coming.
Right.
Know? And so you can, I don't know about you, but someone enters hospice care, when I visit with them, I'm always sort of gearing towards that. But if it's a sudden thing or unexpected or something like that, it really is. I mean, it can catch you like a whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
It can throw a loop in your day and in your week real fast. So,
and as pastors, it really is something we can't schedule in.
Right.
But when it happens, we have to immediately schedule in at least 2 to 3 days of just you're going to be working with that family. You're going to be working with a funeral home. You need to get that schedule out. You need to help, you know, get the people involved that are going to help in the service. And then you're writing your message. And,
yep.
you know, it really takes a lot of our mental time away too, doesn't it? Because
yeah.
all of us on our spiritual time, our mental time is totally dedicated to that moment.
Yeah.
And we sort of put some of our other church activities to the side during that moment. And so, you know, maybe in a sense we don't get to, you know, especially if it's one of our members, we don't get to deal with that grief even in ourselves, do we?
Yeah. So I was actually going to share with that a little bit, Marty, is a few years ago, we went through a stage at Mount Zion. I had been there for a few years to where I'd really gotten to know, members of the congregation. And we lost 3 or 4 pretty pillar members of our congregation, bam, 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 kind of right mm-hmm. in a row. It was like a year later that I was working with my counselor. And, you know, he said, I wonder if you've even dealt with this on a personal level, because these weren't just members of your church. They were friends.
Mm-hmm.
They were family. And have you dealt with this as a man, a friend, not just the pastor? Because they were kind of like bam, 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 right in a row, there wasn't time
mm-hmm.
to grieve because you kind of went to the next one. You,
right.
you know, and you hate to sound that, turn the page about it, but it was almost like in the time to process the first, losing the first person, the second one had gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it can compound itself, you know, if that mm-hmm. happens. And so yeah, that's definitely real.
And I think that families don't realize that, understand the fact that, you know, we're having to go from, you know, you're able, as a family, you can process the grief of your loved one, but you're not necessarily having to when it comes to some others that might have come into your church or,
right.
or whatever. I mean, they do, but not.
Right.
But we have to.
Right.
Because we haven't had a chance to, we don't get that same chance to grieve because we've got to stand there and be sort of, I guess, somewhat stoic. Maybe. And yeah, a counselor would tell you that. And I think that some of this even revolves around the fact that, you know, you've had some of those. And I know that just recently I've dealt with, you know, we had 4 members pass away in less than a month.
Yeah.
The 2 were, we'll say were sick. I mean, they had, they were in the nurse, one was in nursing home, one was bedridden. And so, you know, that was not like it was not unexpected, It just maybe not during that time.
Right.
Two were, and they came within less than 3 days apart.
Right.
One had not been very well, and it was just an unexpected passing. The other was killed in a car wreck, and then his wife was sent to the hospital, and we dealt with that for some time. And part of what I think what we want to talk about with grief today is, how does the church itself deal with this, and should it?
Right.
You know, as a community. I know the one thing that I came into that Sunday after those two deaths, unexpected deaths, and not knowing how to process it myself. And I just owned up to the church and said, I'm going to tell you, church, I don't know how we process through this in this moment.
Yeah.
And the best thing I can do is I'm going to offer you this. I'm going to have a short meditation because the scripture really kind of applies well with our situation. But the rest of it is, we're just going to be here because the two families were there that morning. And we were going to just be there together. And I told him, I said, you know, I have the keys to the church. We won't lock the door till we're ready to go. And, you know, we were there over 2 hours.
Yeah, just being together.
And that is, that's the service that closed, you know. And so I guess in that moment we learned that even the church itself has to process grief. Mm-hmm. And how does it do that? And how do we as ministers, how do we initiate that, and how do we walk with our congregation in times like this?
Yeah, well, and some of that's built by context, right? Mm-hmm. Some of that's built by how the community grieves together. Some of that also has to do with the size of the church,
right?
Some of that has to do with how I don't want to make this sound like people are more important than others,
right.
But
no.
Some people pass, and they're connected to your church.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But some people pass, and I know you dealt with this with at least some, if not all of those that you did. They're pillar members. It's like a mm-hmm. foundational piece of this church is missing now.
And right,
I've had a few of those. I had one just as, you know, last year. It rocked everybody's world because that mm-hmm. person was such an intricate part of our ministry, and to lose them, we lost a part of ourselves.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to name, first of all, that we're batting around ideas, but it's not cookie cutter, right?
Sure, yes.
You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. I even look at the journey of my own congregation, mm-hmm. how we dealt with death, you know, 10 years ago mm-hmm. is very different than how it is now, just as times have changed and people have changed and, mm-hmm. and the size of the church has changed. And I think we as a society, I mean, COVID really reset a lot of it.
Right.
Because we have, 2 years where, I know we lost 13 members during COVID, and we only had 2 public funerals.
And even if we did a public funeral, it was all at the graveside.
Right.
You didn't get that opportunity to have sort of a family night where you can just come and visit and share in the experience. You just, all of a sudden, you were at the graveside, you did the service, and then you walked away.
Right.
I would imagine that some people really didn't get to process grief in the same way that, you know, at least we're kind of back to that now where we can have more public services, where we can be in the room together. And, I mean, there's still the risk at times,
right.
But it's very minimal in this day and time.
Right.
I think that's really been helpful to, I know for the couple of families I had, it was very helpful for them to now be able to have this family night, to just have people come in and greet them and to share with them their own sense of grief and loss in the midst of all of this and share that with them. And that becomes important in a church when we can, I know one of the things we did on that morning is we stood in a circle as the whole church. Now you have to be mindful that my church can have less than 50 people at times.
Right.
And you can do that in a space a little easier. But we just stood in a circle, you know, and had a prayer.
Yeah.
And just offered that, not just to those two families, but made sure to mention the other two families that weren't there, you know, not in there that morning, but also for the church itself, because in that moment, the church needed to grieve.
Yeah.
Because like you said, I mean, at least with the last two who had been coming to church fairly often, even up until the last time, all of a sudden they're not there anymore.
Right. Right.
And they're, like you said, they were pillars of the church. Now one, granted, had not been at the church as long at times. The other one was he would say that my parents brought me in as a baby, you know, and oh my gosh, that's the kind of person that you're going, you know, they know everything about what goes on that's gone on in this church, and all of a sudden they're gone. And it's just in a blink of an eye. I mean, I just saw this gentleman that Saturday at a service. or Sunday for worship. And so, you know, and how do we walk with our church in the midst of that? Because now they're going, you know, that person's not there. And that was a person that would share the stories of the church. That's a person who had a deep history in this church. And for some of us, he sat on a church board. It was a very discerning person, you know, that really had the pulse of the congregation and brought up some great ideas. And so now the church is without that. And you're kind of going, we've almost got to reset, don't we?
Well, and Marty, I think, you know, for us as ministers, you know, one of the gentlemen that we lost, I mean, he was, I kind of laughed and said, like, he was one of my guys. Like, if I was dealing with something on an extremely personal level, if I was, if I needed to wrap my head around something from the congregational standpoint, if I was having a hard time, you know, discerning a situation, I called him. You know, it was like, and so when you lose those folks, and you're right, because there is a, the grieving process for some of these starts earlier, because as they get sick and, you know, perhaps they're not as, at as much church stuff, or they're unable to make it. You know, I know we have some folks who have served our church for decades and now they're starting to get to the age where maybe they don't drive at night as well anymore. So they're not serving on as many things, or they go to the shut-in, you know, they go on a shut-in list. And so folks are going to visit them, and the relationship changes. And part of that grief actually happens before the death. I think it happens as that person is no longer as involved, and all of a sudden you're looking back going, I remember when this person came to Sunday school, or when they were at Bible study, or you know, and so some of that grief can be strung out, and I think we as a as ministers can recognize that. I think some of how we help people deal with that, we help encourage the church, is in a subtle way, you know, and the challenge is when it's a sudden death, that all of a sudden that gets jam-packed into, you know, three days. But really, I think part of us is, part of our challenge as ministers is to remind folks that that people leave their thumbprint. You know, that's one of the images that I like to use at funerals is, all of us have had the fingerprint of this person on our life. And we can acknowledge that. We can acknowledge that our churches will have the thumbprint of certain individuals on it for decades. There are people who have left, who have, you know, gone on to be with Jesus, who I still see their work at my congregation a decade after their death. That thumbprint will always be there. But then how do we use that to propel us to continue to chase Jesus and not view them as more important or more of a saint than the next person? Because sometimes it can be easy to immortalize certain people in the life of the church. I think we as pastors have to walk that out a little bit, is to say, yes, this person was a really good example of following Jesus, but let's use them to propel us to do the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point it's kind of like, now who carries on in the same way or in a different way too, but has that same zeal and love for that church that they did. But we have to move on. I mean, you know, even when we do a funeral and we talk to family members and when we go visit them after the death and those kind of things, I mean, we're still encouraging that person in this moment and giving them comfort in that in those days, but also helping them to move forward in their lives, knowing that that person is not with them now, and now they have to do something that continues to, so they don't get into a state of mental decline or one of those things. So, you know, and I think we have to do that with our church too. And I think you're right, you know, that while that person may leave a thumbprint, that's kind of all it is a thumbprint. And it was good work that they probably did, but that person's not with us anymore. And so someone's got to take that mantle, we might say, and carry it, Almost in the same way when we think, when we teach people about scripture and we say that, you know, Jesus, you know, left the disciples, but he felt like it was a good time to leave because it was going to be in good hands.
Right.
He knew who could carry it on.
Right.
You know, the disciples I know realize, you know, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, what do we do now? But Jesus knew they could carry on.
Yeah.
And I think we have to realize that those folks that have now left us are hoping, I'm sure had hoped that someone would carry on what they had done, what they had started, a program,
right,
or anything it could have been. So,
right. Well, and I don't know about you, Marty, but so one of the scriptures that I use pretty much at every funeral, memorial service, graveside, is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, when Paul talks about believers who have died.
Mm-hmm.
And I work at that book ending yet, because where it starts is, we don't want you to grieve like the rest of the world who have no hope.
Yeah.
So let's have hope. But then my favorite part of that scripture is at the very end, Paul says, encourage one another with these words, where he talks about, you know, we're all going to be with Jesus. Jesus is going to come back. Mm-hmm. We're all going to be reunited. And so the bottom line for the Christian is the death of a saint is bookended, and Paul's writing with hope and encouragement. And so that's the scripture that I spend a lot of time working with. We talk about, how do you help the church grieve?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that. It's to say, yes, we need to grieve. Grief is good. It's, mm-hmm, it's a God-given thing that we need to help. But we need to do so with hope that person is with Christ and we too can be with Christ. And then encouragement that Jesus is still at work in us and around us, and carrying the legacy of that person.
Mm-hmm.
I know for one of the other things I was going to mention is, a few years ago, there was a young lady in our congregation who brought an idea, and I don't know if it was her idea, I don't know what the genesis of it was, but she challenged our church to have a remembrance dinner. We had lost a lot of just really important people, and she you know, came up and said, I want to do a remembrance dinner. We did it in the fall,
mm-hmm,
and throughout that time, we had folks bring pictures of their loved ones, stories about their loved ones. We sat in the church fellowship hall, and we shared those stories specifically. We then had a person in our community that works with bereaved and grief-stricken people. She came and gave a sermon of sorts, or a teaching of sorts, about how we continue to live through grief. Mm-hmm. We put together a slideshow of some of those folks. We lit candles and just had a moment where not only those folks who had experienced loss, but the congregation in a defined setting gathered around them. And we talked about what a good event that was, and that we'd like to do it again. And the season's just never been right.
Yeah,
it's not something that we wanted to do like annually or something. We just needed to do it as the time arose. And I really appreciated that. She had that creative, you know, stroke, and then she challenged the church to do so. It was a marvelous, you know, night,
yeah,
that we did. And so, you know, just being creative and knowing the pulse of the congregation like that, you know, and especially at that time, because the folks who had passed, they had tons of family members in our congregation. And so it literally was like every person in our congregation had been touched by death, mm-hmm, in that season, one way or the other, just by the folks who had been lost and the way they were connected to, yeah, our church.
Well, that's interesting. So, but yeah, and so grief is in our church. It's a part of our life, part of the season, and we just have to learn how to deal with it. And you know, at some point, it'd be great for even us to talk about it, and maybe we could chat with someone else to talk about how do we as pastors deal with our own grief at times. But yeah, how do we deal as a church? And one of the things, if you are a listener, is we'd love for you to share on our Facebook page, you know, how has your church dealt with grief? Have y'all dealt with it in certain ways? And what are some services that you might have put together that allows people, besides the funeral service, besides the memorial service, that allows people to sort of share in the grief together,
yeah,
in some way? So that's sort of our that's a way for us to know, John, that somebody's listening, right?
That's it. Well, and I think too, Marty, you know, you talk about that. The other thing I thought about was, man, I realized during COVID how much preparing a funeral meal. I don't know how much your congregation does of that. But, you know, providing a meal for the family, like how many people in our church, that was their way of entering into grief and standing with the family and thinking about their own things. Man, when we weren't doing funeral meals, like there are people in my church, they were like, no, we need to have a funeral meal for me. Like, this is the way that I'm going to stand with them.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, this is what I do to help stand with my brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
There was one woman who she makes macaroni and cheese for about every one of those dinners. And I remember her talking about, like, that's my time as I'm making that macaroni and cheese. I'm thinking about that person and what they meant to me. And it gives me a fixed thing to do, you know, while I'm doing that. So even something as small as that, maybe your church does funeral meals and they do them really well, or maybe your church even just sends flowers. I mean, how do you enter your congregation into those things? Because I did not realize, just, you know, for me, I'm going to a funeral meal, just find some people to make some fried chicken and, you know, macaroni and cheese. But what you found out was in the DNA of our congregation, that was a moment of entering grief. It wasn't just preparing macaroni and cheese and green beans for people. So just interesting how those things take form.
And some people do that really well. Some people are very organized and just...
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right. I bet if I asked a couple of those folks that do that, that's probably one of their things they might say. It's just our way to be connected with that family in this moment.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do. I mean, because we said that, you know... We've got almost a 3-day leeway to do all this. They do too.
Yep.
Because all of a sudden they're calling us going, do you think that family wants a meal? And we're going, well, I need to talk to them first.
Right.
Because I want to know. It's not that, that people don't, want meals at time or anything, but some families just are going, you know, we don't want to hang around. We just want to go home.
Yeah.
And so we have to be, you know, you say that, but I think we also have to be, very conscious of the fact that maybe families don't want it. So we have to check with them first. But even if you do that, those people have only got a couple of days to put that together.
Yeah.
And you know, this is one chance for me to say too, is that we were blessed as a church that Matt Zion stood with us for a little bit. John's church sent us some flowers.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
People really liked that.
Yeah.
And I have a couple of people who put flowers together, who are flower people. And, I said, so we put it out that first Sunday, and I said, what do we do with them now? You know, because, you know, we're not there for a week. And she says, I think those are extended life flowers. She says, put a little water in them, put them in the refrigerator. We can have them out next week. Sure enough, they still look good the week after.
That's
so
cool.
It's good to have florists in your church who know what flowers are. In fact, it was so funny. She said, I bet I know who sent those flowers or who brought those flowers, the company. She says, everybody, you talked about a thumbprint.
Yeah.
She says, every flower company has its own DNA and know who sends what. So that was kind of funny. But
cool.
Yeah, John, just to say, you know, we appreciate what y'all's church did in that moment because we went through quite a bit for a little bit as a congregation.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much just having the four deaths in such a short span. It was just those two that really hit us hard because of just the suddenness of them.
Right.
When that was unexpected, and it just within less than a 3-day period.
Yeah, it goes to show. I mean, you talk about the flower situation. For those who might not know, like our churches have a lot of overlap. It's from our work on the podcast, from your and I's friendship. Our associate pastor and his family are connected. His wife used to go to your church. There's a lot of connections between Mount Zion and Mount Bethel. And
before John came there, I was the pastor before. I was a supervisor for EFSM, what was that shared ministry program. And so I got to know some of the folks. Some of them may not be there now, but I know a couple of folks there that are still a part of your church. And so we've had some association with your church coming when you got Ethan and Haley, and we helped, you know, I helped that, and we sort of
naming those connections between. And it was so cool because I think that stood as a testimony. I don't know about you, but I heard from other congregations to say, we need to be thinking about how we can, you know, be thinking through that, you know, what congregations are we close to that when they go through things. And so, many times talk about working together on vacation Bible schools and working together on outreach programs. We'll stand together in times of grief. And another thing I was going to tell you, Marty, I got this running joke with my mom because you're talking about how we're lucky to have organizational people for the meals.
Yeah.
That was my mom at her home church.
Okay.
For like a couple year span, mom was the funeral food lady. She made a lot of the food. She got it all together. And I just remember like saying to her at one point as a joke, I was like, so mom, just so you know, like before you die, we're going to need you to go ahead and make up the list of who's bringing stuff to your funeral. If you can have the stuff in crock pots ready for us to go to keep it warm.
That's right.
We would really appreciate you helping us out because honestly, nobody knows who's going to take care of your meal because you've taken care.
There you go.
You know, just you need to have a plan of succession. That's all I'm saying.
That's
mom.
What you need.
That's what you need. That's what you can do.
That's
for
right. But imagine. There's a lot of truth in that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You know, it is so welcoming when people come and they go, oh, that person had already written out what they wanted in their service.
That's right.
The one service we did just recently is that he wanted to end. He wanted a specific song in his service,
and it was great.
And it was "Prop Me Up Against a Jukebox When I Die." And when we played that, I think that because that's an older song, mm-hmm. when it first got turned on and started, it is a little bit of a somber, quiet song. I mean, it doesn't really have that upbeatness to it until you get closer to the chorus.
Yep.
And it was funny to see the people laughing because they realized this is exactly who that person is.
Yep.
And so we did that. But I had never had a funeral I did where you sang, you played the song, "Prop Me Up Against the Jukebox."
I
so,
like it.
That's
like
good.
It.
So
yep.
It's interesting. And I think sometime maybe, John, that's what we can do too. You know, ideas pop to us as we're talking together. It's just, you know, what are some unique funerals? But what are some ways to do funerals as well? I mean, I think we need to remind people that in this time of grief, there is a service that takes place.
Yep.
And families have a difficult time thinking about sometimes what they need to be doing. Because if you sit in a funeral home with somebody, you realize that how important it is as a pastor if you can come and walk with them in that moment because they're not able to kind of process it very quickly, I guess we might say.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something to think about too, John. Yep. But hopefully you've enjoyed what you've heard today. I mean, you know, like we said, you know, if you hear something that you can use or you want to share with us some things that you have done or your church has done in the process of dealing with grief as a congregation, let us know. Just, you know, speak up or share it on the Facebook page there. And we'd love to hear from you.
Always.
And it, we just like, again, thank you for being our listener. We hope that you are enjoying what we're going to try to bring. It's good to be back, John, doing this.
Very good.
Even with our new silly little logo we've got now.
Faces for radio, baby.
Yeah.
Faces for radio.
But I've had a couple people say something. They liked our new logo.
It's good stuff.
So, So again, we'd like to say we appreciate you coming out and hearing the podcast and doing what you got to do, and we ask your blessings be upon everything you do as well. We'd like to thank you as a listener of the podcast. We value you as a listener and hope that you've enjoyed what you heard on this episode. We'd ask that you tell all your friends that they can find us on Podbean and hopefully iTunes here. I think there's been a little bit of a snafu with that.
Apparently, when you don't publish a podcast in a year, Apple wants to, you know, make you go through some motions again, but we'll have it up soon.
Yes. And if you're able to hear that, if you're an iTunes listener, you're not going to hear it till after it's on. So but as a listener, if you like what you hear, we do ask that you rate the podcast, maybe even give a comment. John, if you don't like it though,
keep it to yourself.
Go and keep it to yourself. You can connect with us on Facebook or email us at 2ptpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
God's best on your day.
Thanks for listening to the Two Preachers Talking Podcast. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter or connect with the show by emailing 2ptpodcast@gmail.com. Join us next time for another episode of the Two Preachers Talking Podcast.